talk today is Living Well, Guideposts for a Happy Life. And when Connie gave me this date for the talk, she did not give me a subject, and she said I could just pick anything I wanted to talk about. Well, she threw me for a loop. It took me a week and a half, and I kept thinking and looking. It's like, what am I going to talk on? What am I going to talk on? So then I started going through over the internet, looking at, you know, spiritual books and this and that and the other. And I went on, I think I Googled spiritual gardening to see what would come up. Well, what's weird is this book came up. It's called Aging Well, Surprising Guideposts to a Happier Life. And I don't know how it came up on spiritual gardening, but there it was. So I went to the library and got this book. And the book is written by Dr. Vallant, and he is the director of a study that was done by Harvard as a study of adult development. And they took about 2,500 people as teenagers and studied them for 50 years and did statistics on it. And that's what this book is about, is what were the characteristics that created happy lives, and if people didn't have those, then how their lives failed. Mm-hmm. So it was really interesting to read that, and a lot of really good information in this, and we'll be going over some of that. So that's where I started, was with aging well. And I don't want you guys to think this talk is all about aging, because it's not. It's about living. But this is where I started, was with aging, and, you know, and with the concept that a lot of people, in fact, the majority of the population seems to think that as you age, you start declining, and you become decrepit, and you start falling apart, and financially you may be strapped and have to get a reverse mortgage, or you have to go into assisted living, and people project all of this into their futures. And Abraham brought up a good point in, I'm doing the Abraham 30-day challenge right now, and one of the lessons, it talks about watching television and how you get fed all these pills and medications and, you know, for this and that and the other, and then a reverse mortgage and assisted living homes and nursing homes and all of this stuff, and people buy into that and think this is what our future holds, is going downhill. Well, the study really emphasizes that that's not necessarily the case. So that was where I started. Well, then the next book I found is really great, too. And this one is by Thomas More, and it's called The Reenchantment of Everyday Life. And he also wrote Care of the Soul. And in this book, The Reenchantment is putting spirituality in everything we do, in every day. And some really great material in that one. Then the third book was a book, that one came from the library as well. Library is a good source for some great books. And this book is called Anatomy of the Spirit, and it's by Dr. Carolyn Mice. And I've had this book on my bookshelf for years. I don't know how many years. Never read it. So a few weeks after I started doing the research on the talk, this book just kind of shouted off the shelf at me and said, hey, check this out. And it turned out to be just really, really what I wanted. And it's about the seven stages of power and healing. And then, of course, 365 Days, Science of Mind, Earnest Home Affirmations. Terrific. I use this all the time. Love it. Chatting with the Beloved by Connie Chandler with Abraham. Wonderful book. Wonderful resource. I use this a lot in this. So those are my resource books. And so we'll get on with the talk. Oops, I skipped one here. This is, my first slide is the seven dwarfs of old age. And this shows what, you know, a lot of people think of decline is there's nappy and wrinkly and grumpy. What is that? Grumpy? I can't.
Squinty.
Squinty, okay. I can't read it from here.
Rocky, saggy, farty, and leafy.
Okay, so that's what we don't want. So the Aging Well book is about what successful aging is and how it can be achieved. And let me show you my next slide. This one I love because this is what I want to be. This is a picture of two old ladies sitting on a bench, and it says, when I get old, I don't want people thinking, what a sweet little old lady. I want them saying, oh, crap, what's she up to next? This is three old ladies in their purple clothes and their red hats, and their ages are 92, 94, and 96. They live in a house together, and one night, the 96-year-old draws a bath, puts her foot in, and says, was I getting in or getting out of the bath? The 94-year-old yells back, I don't know, I'll come up and see. She starts up the stairs and pauses. Then she yells, was I going up the stairs or coming down? The 92-year-old was sitting in the kitchen having tea, listening to her sisters. She shakes her head and says, I sure hope I never get that forgetful. She knocks on wood for good measure. She then yells, I'll come up and help both of you as soon as I see who's at the door. So in Aging Well, the doctor says, the individual lifestyle choices play a greater role than genetics, wealth, race, or other factors in determining how happy people are in their later life. And he explores the importance of marriage and the impact of divorce, new friends for new life situations, the role of play, alcohol and other mood elevators, making contact with new people, and dozens of other life choices that can make a difference. And a question from the study to the participants, what is the most important thing that makes you want to get out of bed in the morning? An 84-year-old study participant said, to live, to work, to learn something that I didn't know yesterday, to enjoy the precious moments with my wife. And a 78-year-old study participant said, all the many plans for the day. I love life and all I do. I love the outdoors. It is a joy to be alive and living with my best friend, my wife of 50 years. Mm-hmm. And this is from Abraham about aging and decline. Most people seem to believe that it's natural to decline as you move through time, and it is not natural. Emphasizing. And most people believe that they will need financial assistance in taking care of the poor, decrepit, and broken body in the last days of their life. And Abraham says, where do you get this stuff? And there's a race consciousness about aging and decline. You get it from those who want to sell you remedies for disgusting decline. You didn't get it from your source. Your source doesn't believe it. As you are an observer of life, whatever you are observing dictates the vibration that you practice. As you are a creator of life, you deliberately choose what you observe in order to affect the vibration. You deliberately choose what you think in order to deliberately affect the vibration. And from Ernest Holmes, 365 Days of Science and Mind, I love this one. Today is a fresh beginning, a new start, a joyous adventure on the pathway of eternal progress. Today is bright with hope and happy with fulfillment. Therefore, I affirm that this is the day that God has made. that it is good and that I find fulfillment in it. The law of mind responding to this word of good makes everything in my life simple, effective, and whole. Erik Erikson is a Danish psychologist and affiliate of Anna Freud. And during the 1940s, he began harvesting data from this Harvard study, which the Aging Well book is about, and continued to follow it for the next 50 years. And Erikson became the first social scientist to conceptualize clearly adult development as progress, not decline. Per Erikson, life was no longer to be a staircase leading downward, but a path leading outward. That was the first in those times. And from Aging Well, these are the adult life tasks that were stressed in this study as to whether people were successful or not successful in living well. The first one was identity, which is a sense of oneself. Intimacy, living closely with another person. The third one is career consolidation, expanding one's personal identity to assume a social identity within the work environment. Generativity, which is the demonstration of a clear capacity to unselfishly guide the next generation. Keeper of the meaning, conservation and preservation of the collective products of mankind, the culture in which one lives and its institutions. And the final one was integrity, an experience which conveys some world order and spiritual sense. The choices in these areas had to do with how successful the participants were in aging well and having happy lives. My focus in guideposts for living well are a little bit different than Aging Well and Dr. Vallant. These are the guideposts that I want to focus on today. Love, home, nature, silence and sound, feelings, focus, spirit, and appreciation. And the first guidepost is love. And from chatting with the beloved, the deepest desire people have is to know that they are loved. Your ability to express yourself as love is proportionate to how filled up with love you already are. When you really feel immersed in the infinite love of God, there is no limit to how much love you are able to give. It flows through your words, vibrates in your vocal cords, shines in your eyes, radiates in your smile. People get it because you live it. You teach best by your example. Just let yourself feel the love, bask in it, breathe it in, savor it, appreciate it, open your heart and your mind to the evidence of it. And I know that was Abraham talking to Connie, and I think it applies to all of us. It's beautiful. And for Marcus Aurelius, when you arise in the morning, think of what a privilege it is to be alive, to breathe, to think, to enjoy, and to love. That fits right in with our song from Norm this morning.
Yes. For sure.
And there's my list of guideposts. And I want to talk about Charlie Chaplin. For years, he entertained millions in the silent movies without ever uttering a word. And they say that when he did speak, he would inspire generations. And here is his Love Yourself manifesto. I know that's hard to read on the screen, so I'm going to read it to you. As I began to love myself, I refused to go on living in the past and worrying about the future. Now I only live for the moment where everything is happening. Today I live each day, day by day, and I call it fulfillment. As I began to love myself, I understood how much it can offend somebody if I try to force my desires on this person. Even though I knew the time was not right, and the person was not ready for it, and even though this person was me. Today, I call it respect. As I began to love myself, I found that anguish and emotional suffering are only warning signs that I was living against my own truth. Today I know this is authenticity. What a wise man. As I began to love myself, I stopped craving for a different life, and I could see that everything that surrounded me was inviting me to grow. Today I call it maturity. As I began to love myself, I quit trying to always be right, and ever since, I was wrong less of the time. Today, I discovered that is modesty. As I began to love myself, I freed myself of anything that is no good for my health. Food, people, things, situations, and everything that drew me down and away from myself. At first, I called this attitude a healthy egoism. Today, I know it is love of oneself. As I began to love myself, I recognized that my mind can disturb me and it can make me sick. But as I connected it to my heart, my mind became a valuable ally. Today, I call this connection wisdom of the heart. As I began to love myself, I quit stealing my own time, and I stopped designing huge projects for the future. Today, I only do what brings me joy and happiness, things I love to do and that make my heart cheer, and I do them in my own way and in my own rhythm. Today, I call it simplicity. We no longer need to fear arguments, confrontations of any kind, or problems with ourselves and others. Even stars collide, and out of their crashing, new worlds are born. Today, I know that is life. And I have copies of this for you
Thank
to take
you.
Home.
Thank you.
That, it's just beautiful. Just yeah. beautiful. Brilliant. Love that. And I love how Connie talks about how she sees all aspects of her home, her appliances, the walls, the very nails in the roof were singing and dancing and making her the powerfully supportive environment for her wonderful life. Timeless magic. Enchantment. Abraham says to talk to our appliances. I skipped a page in here somewhere. Anyway, our next guidepost is home, the guidepost for our happy life. And this is my front yard and some of my plants. And I love my home. I went to one of Connie's Abraham workshops back in February, and Abraham said that, Connie, can you read that? I can't see it from here at the bottom.
Kitty love focused is direct from source.
And at the top it's, I love cats because I love my home, and after a while they become its soul. And that's a picture of my two kitties.
Oh, they're beautiful.
I love that. And for people that are dog lovers, this one says, and dogs were created especially for children.
He is the god of frolic. True. True.
And this is Jesse. Jesse was born at our house and rehomed. And she's with this wonderful family with two children. We get photos all the time. She's been camping in Canada. She's been to Florida. She's been all over the place, and she's dearly loved. So we're so happy for her.
The life of Riley.
Yes. And this is from
Beauty and the Beast.
Beauty and the Beast, and this reminded me of Connie's dancing appliances. And I wanted to mention this guy, where this goes back to the homes. I don't know this man's name or what city he's in, but he's in California. And he takes old thrown away materials, old wood and different things, and he builds these little houses for the homeless. Wow. And he says they cost him about $30 a piece.
Wow.
They're all, each individual, they're painted and they're stylish, and he gives these to the people on the street, and they're just absolutely precious little homes for them.
Wow.
What a wonderful project.
That's pretty cool. What's his name?
I don't know. I found him online, and I don't know what it is. I should have written it down, but I didn't. It was one of those things I did. I took the pictures and then went on. Our next guidepost is nature. And from the Thomas More book, The Reenchantment of Everyday Life, the Bible tells us that paradise was a garden, but it also hints that a garden is paradise. Gardens work powerful enchantment as they take us body and soul out of the busyness of life and into a place set apart. This is one of my favorite slides. This one is a mystical gate. And it shows the light shining through and flowers on both sides. And in Reenchantment, he says, entering a garden is like passing through a mystical gate. In a garden, the soul finds its needed escape from life and its entry into a space where eternity is more evident than time, and where the ritual arrangement of life is more important than the business of surviving and making progress. Time stands still, or at least moves more slowly in the garden, and even so, today the sundial seems more appropriate than the clock. And this is a picture of a beautiful hillside with a very large sundial in the forefront. And here's a smaller sundial among flowers. Moore says, one powerful convergence of spirituality and sensuality in a garden lies in the aromas and smells, first of the earth and then of flowering plants. The sense of smell not only conjures up memory, as is well known, a primary activity of the soul, but is intimately implicated in the spiritual life. The Magi gave the infant Jesus the gift of incense, and incense and perfumes have been used widely to accompany prayers, with the purpose of making prayers more pleasing and getting them into the spiritual realm quickly and directly. And what is sweeter than the aroma of curing hay, or the passing scent of blossoms in a morning garden? This is the stuff of natural religion and the origins of enchantment. And this reminded me of when I used to live in California among the orange groves. And that scent of orange blossoms would just waft on the air, especially in the evening. I can't think of a sweeter scent than orange blossoms. And the other scent that really stays with me is the Stargazer lily, which was my daughter Sue's favorite lily and mine as well. And I can remember so many times reaching down to smell the daylily, and you get up and you have orange pollen all over your face.
Yeah.
And they're just such beautiful flowers. We may have to learn again the mystery of the garden, how its external characteristics model the heart itself, and how the soul is a garden enclosed, our own perpetual paradise, where we can be refreshed and restored. And words of wisdom from Charlie Brown and friends? Most psychiatrists agree that sitting in a pumpkin patch is excellent therapy for a troubled mind. And my favorite gardening quote, This work is what I live for. It nourishes what is good in my life. Working thus in the garden, a feeling for the sanctity of all life pervades me like a word from God welling up through my soul. My busy mind relaxes, and I am again at peace. Beautiful. And this was a sign I found online. Gardening is cheaper than therapy, and you get tomatoes. And here's another one. Your mind is a garden. Your thoughts are the seeds. You can grow flowers, or you can grow weeds.
Cool.
Our next guidepost is silence and sound. This reminds me of Norm's song as well. Wind in the trees, thunder, flowing water, falling leaves, rain, animal voices, bird song. We live amid a teeming polyphony of natural sounds. Both quiet and silence are aids to enchantment because they allow us to hear the chant of nature, the sounds of our interior lives, and music. The key to finding enchantment through the doorway of silence is not to consider silence negatively. Silence is not an absence of sound, but rather a shifting of attention towards sounds that speak to the soul. Thomas More says, "I need silence to hear the intuitions that pass by, like angels on their vaporous footpath, making soft, barely perceptible sounds." Rarely does a new idea come along orchestrated for trumpets. And then there's music and dancing. And from chatting with the beloved, my vibrational reality is full of chirping, swooping, dancing, sewing, singing, cooperative components from all the kingdoms, playing and co-creating a magical, mystical, awesome, and wondrous life for me. Maybe enchanted as well. The universe is alive with spirit dancing in the strings, atoms, molecules, cells, systems, beings, and things of creation. At every level, from the microcosmic to the macrocosmic, the universe dances and soars with the being of God. The being of God dances in your body, endlessly renewing itself and restoring divine balance and harmony as you live. And I love these phrases: flowing with divine grace and dancing with the rhythms of life. Those resonate for me all the time. These are some beautiful little girls singing, and there's our dancers. Our next guidepost is feelings. From Abraham, most people don't realize that as they continue to find things to complain about, they disallow their own physical well-being. Many don't realize that before they were complaining about an aching body or a chronic disease, they were complaining about many other things first. It does not matter if the object of your complaint is about someone you are angry with, behavior in others that you believe is wrong, or something wrong with your own physical body. Complaining is complaining, and it disallows improvement. It's really important that the way you feel be your top priority. Not just the way you feel about what others are doing, but the way you feel within the thoughts that you were thinking. You are going to be able to tell the difference between the thought that you were thinking that hinders you and a thought that you were thinking that gives you life and supports you. You are going to get so good at being able to feel the dynamics of the thought when it's active within you that you're going to find yourself wanting to feast your mind on thoughts. Reach for a better feeling. And I wanted to mention at this point Connie's list of words, and I know you won't be able to read these, and if you want copies of these, you can contact me and I can send them to you. I didn't have enough copies to bring for everybody, but she has a list of feelings on how good are you willing to feel. And I think these are so handy to have because you can go through those and pick out words that resonate with you. There's a couple of pages of those. And Connie, those are wonderful. Those are really, really good for us to have. And if any of you want to email me, it's gardenrose with no E in the middle at comcast.net. And this is a feeling as well, but it's such a special one that I gave it its own category, and that is joy.
Yes.
We had to have extra zing in there for joy.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of success for most people revolves around money or the acquisition of property or other possessions. This is Abraham. But we consider a state of joy as the greatest achievement of success. And while the attainment of money and wonderful possessions certainly can enhance your state of joy, the achievement of a good-feeling physical body is by far the greatest factor for maintaining a continuing state of joy and well-being. And so there are few things of greater value than the achievement of a good-feeling body. If you find yourself surrounded with joyous beings, it is an indication that you are a joyous being. And if you are surrounded by those who are not joyous, it is an indication that you are the same as that which you have attracted.
Oops.
If you are wanting to offer joy to others, then you must first be joyous. If you are wanting to offer health to others, then you must first seek health for yourself. And as you intend and receive, there will also be contentment. And as you are experiencing contentment, many will flock to your joyous example, wanting to understand how it is that you have achieved this.
Mm-hmm.
To experience the joyous, productive, delicious physical experience that you intended as you emerged into this magnificent physical body, you have only to want that and expect it or allow it to be. All that is, everything that you know or don't know within this magnificent universe is connected and responsive to the powerful law of attraction. Every thought that you offer or every thought that you receive has its own individual vibrational frequency, and by law of attraction will be drawn to that which is same. And this is a mind map that has joy in the center, and that it has all these different channels going out, and it's a way to take those beautiful words and those beautiful what your own guideposts are and put them on one of these lines and then put the words with them on how those things make you feel. I think that's a terrific, terrific plan.
It is.
I have a book at home that I used years ago called Mind Mapping. It's similar to this, only more mental than this being, I think, more spiritual. Kind of looks the same, too, in being able to channel out your directions.
Mm-hmm.
Our next guidepost for a happy life is focus. And Connie gave this to me, the hocus pocus focus. She talked about this back in February at the Abraham meeting. You are the creator who is molding the clay with your focus. Esther and her friend heard a mother the other day trying to get her kids organized to get on the airplane. And she said to them, hocus pocus focus. Esther thought, I like that. I'm taking that with me. Hocus pocus focus. There is a power and a clarity in that, so as you focus on an idea, it becomes a vibration. Focus is the law of attraction in motion. As you focus on love and feel love and loved, more love comes to you from everywhere. You are using your guidance system, molding your clay when you focus. And that reminds me of a story. And this story came from something called the tapping solution. I'd seen a few advertisements for it online, and I found this story about this Buddha. And the story of the Golden Buddha. Over 300 years ago, as a Burmese army planned an attack to invade Thailand, then called Siam, Siamese monks who were in possession of an enormous treasure, a solid gold Buddha that today would be valued at over $200 million, made a decision to protect the Buddha from being plundered. They covered it in 12 inches of clay. The Burmese attackers, thinking it was worthless, ignored it, but sadly killed the monks. So for over 250 years, until the mid-1950s, this Buddha existed only as a clay Buddha. Then, when the Buddha was being moved to a new location by a crane, it began to crack. They didn't expect it to be so heavy. The monks set it down, waiting for a bigger crane the next day, and covered it with a tarp to protect it from the rains. One monk, in the middle of the night, came to check that the tarps were staying on and saw a reflection, a glimmer in the crack. He carefully chiseled away around the crack as the glimmer grew. And then, as the clay fell away, a solid gold Buddha shone once again for the world to marvel at. At the end of the story, the question is asked, is there a golden Buddha within us? Mm-hmm. You see, there is a greatness within all of us, but all too often it is marked and covered by previous experiences, by old patterns, by pressure from society, by past failures and pains. If we can just find that crack, that glimmer inside, connect and focus on our inner being that knows we can love more, be more, live more, manifest more, then the rest of this old junk can fall away easily so we can shine at our brightest. There is power and clarity and focus. This was something that I found online from Abraham Hicks, and I think it's really significant. This is always true. What I think and how I feel and what manifests is always a vibrational match. But here's the big kicker. What manifests isn't manifesting instantaneously. So you've got all this buffer of time leeway that makes you sloppy. If you thought a negative thought and a brick would instantly fall on your head every time, you'd clean up your thinking. But you're not here to be punished about your thinking. You're here to use your thinking and your focus to create. I love that. If a brick fell on your head, wake up.
How many would survive?
Well, I don't know. There's a lot of hard-headed people.
True.
Years ago, I read the autobiography of Benjamin Franklin at a time when I was doing a lot of consulting in offices and businesses, and also with individuals on developing their set of values. And I found that Franklin's virtues were very helpful. And Franklin, at the age of 22, after attending a session of Sunday religious services, was disgusted and went no more to public assemblies, as he put it. He decided to set the tone for his own life. He said he conceived the bold and arduous project of arriving at moral perfection and wanted to live without committing any fault at any time.
Whoa.
So he developed what he called his virtues, a list of what he considered necessary or desirable. He set up a notebook listing his 13 virtues, and for the rest of his life chose one each week for 13 weeks to be perfect. Then started all over again. And here's the list of his virtues. Temperance, eat not to dullness, drink not to elevation. Silence, speak not but what may benefit others or yourself. Order, let all your things have their places. Let each part of your business have its time. Resolution: resolve to perform what you ought. Perform without fail what you resolve. Frugality: make no expense but to do good to others or yourself. For example, waste nothing. Industry: lose no time. Be always employed in something useful. Cut off all unnecessary actions. Sincerity: use no harmful deceit. Think innocently and justly, and if you speak, speak accordingly. Justice: wrong none by doing injuries or omitting the benefits that are your duty. Moderation: avoid extremes. Forbear resenting injuries so much as you think they deserve. Cleanliness: tolerate no uncleanliness about body, clothes, or habitation. Tranquility: be not disturbed at trifles. Chastity: rarely use venery but for health or offspring, never to dullness, weakness, or the injury of your own or another's peace or reputation. And finally, number 13, humility: imitate Jesus and Socrates.
Wow.
And his little notebook had this motto. He had a motto in the front of his book, and he also included a prayer to God that he read daily. And looking back at the age of 79, he said, "On the whole, though I never arrived at perfection but fell short of it, yet I was by the endeavor a better and a happier man." And spirit, this was where I was using the Anatomy of the Spirit by Dr. Carolyn Mice, and she was a medical intuit. She uses intuition for finding illnesses in people and helping to heal them. And she says, one's purpose in life is to live in a manner that is consistent with one's spiritual ideals, to live the golden rule every moment of one's life, and to live every thought as a sacred prayer. And she said, your biography is your biology. She advises us to think of ourselves at all times as an energy being as well as a physical one. The energy part of yourself is the transmitter and recorder of all your thoughts and interactions. Keep in mind at all times that your biography becomes your biology. And what Dr. Mice does in her book is she ties together the Hindu and Indian practice of the seven chakras of the body, and from Christianity, the seven sacraments, and then also from the Kabbalah, the tree of life. And she says that running through all three of these, the seven are all the same thing. And she synchronizes them and teaches people through the use of this, of clearing their path of power, and also healing techniques. And her seven sacred truths of the body and spirit: all is one, honor one another, honor oneself, love is divine power, surrender personal will to divine will, seek only the truth, live in the present moment. There's so much in her book that I just, you know, it's impossible to share it all. I mean, it would be a talk in itself, but it's really worth looking into. Beautiful. And there's the tree of life. And our final guidepost is appreciation. And I found this was interesting with in the 30-day challenge. Abraham says that appreciation, this is all anybody ever needs to know. If they taught one thing, it would be appreciation. Mm-hmm. And they say, the secret to life is this: Look for something to appreciate and practice it until it becomes easy, and you will live happily ever after. And they said that if they could do a workshop, and all it would be teaching that one little phrase, they could charge double the price and send people home in a very short period of time, and it would do it. That's all people really need to know. Appreciate, and you'll live happily ever after. And so it is.
And so it is.
Thank you.
Thank you.